Guys, if you are here for the first time, let me welcome you to our Christmas service. I'm Huge. I'm one of the pastors here at Grace Point. It's great to have you join us this Christmas morning, especially if you've come with friends who've brought you, or maybe you're a family member here visiting over the summer holidays. Welcome to Grace Point. Christmas is always a festive time. We all know that. Our shopping centers are filled with the bright colors of Christmas. Food is what we anticipate, an array of seafood and meats. And drinks that will accompany lunch and dinner and Boxing Day and New Year's. And so Christmas is always a festive time. But I want to say to you that the last few weeks, and certainly the last month, Christmas this year just seems a bit more somber. You've heard Simon pray as we opened our service. The mood just seems a bit more darker this Christmas. A month ago, we met the tragic death of Phil Hughes. And there was an outpouring of grief all over our nation. A young man cut down in the prime of his life in a freak cricket accident. And many homes across our city and certainly our nation had bats put out on the front porch as an expression of grief and respect. And then last week, there was a siege at Martin Place, the tragic death of two of the hostages, Tori and Katrina, not to mention the hostages that many of us know by one degree of separation. Some people here knew those people. And even if you didn't know them, your heart broke. And the outpouring of grief, we saw that by the thousands of flowers laid down at Martin Place. There was outrage, there was grief, and people felt it, we felt it. Then came news of the slaughter of 133 children in Pakistan. And again, we were moved, we were morally outraged. We felt grief. And then, just this week came the news of the brutal stabbing of 8 children in Cairns. And again, the nation is angry, people are grieving, people are hurting. And all of this leading up to the Christmas festivities. And I want to suggest to you this morning, we've come at Christmas, and brokenness in the last month reminds us how broken our world really is. We live in a broken world, we ignore it when it's distant, but when it comes close to us, we begin to realize how broken it really is. You can't deny the fact that we live each day and we wake up each day not always to the sound of good news or great news or happy news, but so often we awake to the sound of suffering, to tears. And that trail of brokenness is carried by those left behind. Friends and family of Tori and Katrina, the parents of those 133 children, school friends and family of the 8 children. And so even amidst the festivities of Christmas, many in our city and our world will be shedding tears of brokenness, tears of loneliness, tears of pain, and tears of suffering. And some of you are not unfamiliar, even yourselves, to the personal suffering that has dogged your life this year, personal tragedy that you might have experienced in your own life. And so all of us, you know, even though there's Christmas festivities all around us, it's also marked by tears, tears of brokenness and suffering, some of it personal, some we've seen in the lives of others. Now, I want to suggest to you this morning, as you've come here this Christmas day, I want to suggest to you that the reason why we feel this way in the face of darkness, in the face of brokenness, because darkness actually tells us and it reminds us that something is wrong in our world. There's something wrong in our lives, in the lives of others, in our city and in our world. That's what darkness actually does. It tells you something is wrong. Because your heart actually tells you when you meet darkness and brokenness that things should be better. That things shouldn't be like this. Katrina's children shouldn't have lost her. No child should be terrorized or massacred. Young men shouldn't be cut down in the prime of their lives. And so the darkness we see and the pain and suffering around us that we experience, that we see others experience, tells us something is wrong. It shouldn't be like that. Now, there are people that have offered us different solutions. Biologists, atheist biologists, Richard Dawkins, this is his answer to the problem of darkness in our world. This is what he would say, having witnessed darkness in the last month. This is what he writes. This is his answer to personal suffering and darkness in people's lives. He writes, "We live in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replications. Some people are going to get hurt, others are just going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice." Basically, he says, what you see is what you get. No reason for it. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Our DNA knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. That's Dawkins' answer to the darkness we feel. You're just unlucky if bad things happen to you. Wrong place, wrong time. Some people are lucky, others aren't. But if that were true, why do we care? Why do we grieve? Why do we long for better? Why are we outraged in the face of darkness, in the midst of suffering and pain? Why do we want better? Philosopher Ravi Zacharias points out in response to Richard Dawkins, if DNA neither knows or cares, what is it that prompts our knowing and our caring and our loving and our longing for the better? If DNA neither knows nor cares, what is it that prompted thousands of people to lay flowers at Martin Place? What is it that prompts hundreds to gather in churches and communities to mourn the death of those 8 children, which is happening right now in Cairns? Churches have opened their doors to actually remember those 8 children. What is it that prompts global moral outrage at the death of those 133 children in Pakistan? You see, all of us here in this room, we want better than the darkness in life. We want better than injustice and suffering and pain. Your soul grates against it. Against the ugliness of hate and malice, you want the beauty of love and acceptance. Against the isolation of loneliness, you want a hand to hold. Against the darkness of illness, you want restoration. We were not made to live in a broken world, which is why our soul grates against the darkness, or at the very least, when we experience pain and suffering in a variety of ways, and sometimes they cut us quite deeply, we begin to realize that something is wrong. We want better. And so even as we celebrate at Christmas, the bad news we all know and the bad news we've grasped this last month is this. Our lives are broken. Our world is a broken place. All around us, that's what we see. In fact, we read the writer in a book of the Bible called Ecclesiastes actually writes these words, and he says, death is really the final darkness that eclipses everything. And that's why the last month for the city of Sydney has been a pretty broken month, because ultimately death is the final darkness that has eclipsed everything leading up to the festivities of Christmas. You read in Ecclesiastes, which is a book on wisdom, death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart. As no one has power over the wind to control it, so no one has power over the time of his death. That really has been the ultimate tragedy that we've witnessed and experienced and seen in the last month. That has been the darkness that has eclipsed people's lives in the last month leading up to Christmas. And so even in the Christmas season, we wish for better days. We long for answers. We wish for more. We wake to the same brokenness that the Christmas festivities tends to hide. And so the pressure of darkness, brokenness, and pain and suffering always drives us to look for a resolution, answers to our hurts, someone who will dispense justice. We long for a savior, a deliverer, and a judge. Now here's the thing, that's the good news of Christmas. The good news of Christmas is that someone has come. Simon read that Bible passage for us. Someone has come to give and do for us what our hearts have always longed for, what the hearts of everyone in this city has longed for and searched for and desired. We read of the coming of one at Christmas who will do for us what we've always longed for. We read, those walking, notice, in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. And then we read, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government, the rule of God will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor. He will comfort. He will be called Mighty God because he's powerful and in control. He will be called Everlasting Father because his love for you is endless. He will be called the Prince of Peace because he will still the chaos that we see and experience in life. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. And that is a description of the coming of Jesus into our world and into our lives. Now, so often, and some of you, if you're regular in our services, you would have heard this last week, and it's a great reminder, isn't it? when we think of Jesus at Christmas, we think of Jesus, the baby born in a manger. That's our dominant picture of Jesus. Yet that's not the picture that the Bible paints for us. You know, when we celebrate birthdays, we don't remember them as babies, do we? We don't see them as babies. Caroline's sitting down the back. Caroline's in her 40s right now. We celebrated her birthday recently. But when we celebrate Caroline's birthday, we don't pull out the baby photos. We don't do that. What do? We celebrate her life, her 43 years, what she's done. She's actually not 43, okay? She's not 43. I made that up. Caroline's older. Okay. No, I shouldn't do that. I love you, Caroline. But we celebrate her life. She's gonna hammer me after church. I'm gonna make a quick exit out that door. But we celebrate her life. We celebrate her accomplishment, how far she's come, how much she's accomplished, how she's matured and how she's grown. That's what we celebrate. We don't celebrate Caroline as a baby. Yet at Christmas, we so often remember we only see Jesus as a baby in a manger. But here we read Jesus' light come in our deepest darkness. We read Jesus not as a child in a manger, but a child who's born to rule. You see there, who comes as comforter to the oppressed, who comes as mighty and powerful over all, who comes as a father who loves us, who comes as bearer of lasting peace, and who will still the chaos of our brokenness in our world and in our lives. That's the Bible's description of Jesus. And so the good news of Christmas is that someone has come in the darkness of our world to give and do for us what our hearts have always longed for. He comes as resolution to the problem of darkness and suffering and pain. And so I want to say to you, this Christmas, we need to be reminded that violence and death will not be the last word. And that's why at Christmas we celebrate Jesus and his birth, because we're celebrating his life for us. And it's in his life that we see what he's done for us and how he's accomplished all this for us. And we see it most supremely at the cross, because at the cross, that's where you see Jesus save. In fact, that's where you see Jesus ride with us and where you see him ride for us. You know, there's nothing better than knowing that someone who's going to walk with you, who's going to be there for you in the darkness. Isn't that true? That's why the I'll Ride With You campaign took off in our city. Now, in the last week or so, it's been shown that the person, the author of the campaign, was a fake. She made up the story. She lied about what inspired her to do what she did. But nonetheless, the campaign took off. The reality is that we want and we long for someone who will ride with us, who will walk with us, who will side with us, who will protect us, defend us, speak for us in our pain and suffering, who will be with us in our brokenness, who will help us overcome everything that we see and feel in darkness. We long for someone who will rule over our pain and suffering. And that's what happens at the cross in the life of Jesus. Because at the cross, Jesus rides for us in the deepest and the most personal of ways. He takes your darkness. He bears your suffering. He experiences your loneliness and grief. He is crushed by our brokenness. Everything in us that hurts others, and everything in others that hurts us, Jesus bears at the cross. You know, it's where Jesus stands in solidarity with us. That's how he identifies with our pain and suffering. And he dies in our place so that we might live. I tell this story every so often, but in 2013, a family of five hikers died while hiking in Colorado. As they hiked, this family, a couple of 100-ton boulders the size of four-wheel drives came crashing down the mountain. The only survivor was a little girl called Gracie Johnson. She was 13. And she survived because as her mom and her sister and her two cousins were crushed by those boulders, Gracie survived because her dad instinctively jumped over Gracie and just cradled her as those boulders crushed them. Gracie's father walked with her on that trail. And as those rocks came, as the darkness descended on them, he took her place. He stood in the gap between Gracie and the boulders. That's what he did. That's what Jesus does. Against the darkness of a broken world that we are part of, that we contribute to, that we experience, Jesus stands and is crushed for us. Now, isn't that what we long for? We wish someone could take our place. Someone who will be with us in our darkness. Someone who is powerful enough to give us security when we're afraid. Someone who is greater than the circumstances we find ourselves in. Someone who will save us. Isn't that what those children long for? Isn't that what those hostages in the siege long for? And the good news of Christmas is that Jesus has come to do just that. Because his death on the cross was not, and it's not, the final word. It didn't hold him. Death didn't hold him. Death didn't shackle him. He wasn't bound by it. He suffered with us, and he was for us. And he overcame the one and final piece of darkness that holds us all captive. Death is the final piece that eclipses pain and suffering. Have you ever realized that? Death is what makes us hungry and thirsty for help, for answers, for resolution, for healing. That's why we hope for better in the midst of the Sydney siege, the death of those 8 children, the loss of life in Cairns. But death could not hold Jesus. And the story of Christmas finds its resolution at Easter. That's why we celebrate his life. The story of Christmas finds its resolution at Easter because there you find that Jesus didn't just ride with you, he also rose over death for you. And it follows that if he rose over death, it means that he rules over all. He rules over our brokenness and pain. He's there in control, even in the darkness. And he knows what it means to be broken because he died. He knows what it means to experience pain and suffering and loss, but he rose over it. And it means, ultimately, Jesus is able to save. Because of Jesus, violence and death will never be the last word. That's the good news of Christmas. That's why we read what we read. Those walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. And so that's why Christmas is good news. Not because of the baby Jesus, but because of who has come in the Lord Jesus. Someone who will ride with us in our darkness. Someone who will die for us because of our darkness, and someone who will rise for us over our darkness. That's why Jesus goes by another name at Christmas. If you've never realized this, Matthew chapter 1, verse 23 reminds us they will call him Emmanuel. Why? Which means God is with us. He's come. He's now with us. I love ending every Christmas telling the story of the Star of David, and a lot of you have heard this story. And I love the story because that's what we're like. The Star of David is a blue sapphire that costs about $5 million. But when it was discovered some 30 years ago, it was actually discovered by a man called Robert Cutshaw. But for 20 years, he kept this uncut blue rock under his bed because he thought it was nothing more than a rock that he was willing to sell for $100. And so in his rock store, he would often put it on the counter, and it was there, willing to part with it for $100. Every so often, he would put it under the bed because no one would buy it. And then in 1987, he discovered that he had the largest, most valuable blue sapphire ever found in the world. In 87, it was worth $2 million. Today, it's worth $5 million Aussie dollars. Now, I suggest to you this morning that you and I have before us this morning a much greater gift that's priceless. That's more than just a baby born in a manger. We often don't see him as one who came to ride with us in our darkness. We don't see him as one who came to die for us because of our darkness. And we often don't see him as the one who came, who now rises over our darkness. Now, Robert Cutshaw, he kept that blue sapphire under his bed, collecting dust for 20 years, shelved in his life, mostly ignored. Maybe you've come this Christmas, a friend has brought you. Maybe a family member has brought you. And Jesus for you has always been like that sapphire hidden away, nothing more than a sentimental baby in a manger. A cute but an unneeded gift. Can I say to you this morning, Christmas morning is a great day for you to unwrap the gift. Not the baby Jesus, but Jesus, the light of the world, who's come in your darkness. Jesus, the one who endured the darkness in your place, and Jesus, the one who rises over the darkness for you. Jesus, the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And so may this Christmas for you, may he be the cause of your celebration. May he be your comfort in darkness. May he be your security in your distress. May he be the light that you long for. May he be comfort in your struggle, hope in your uncertainty. May he be the one you look for this Christmas. The music team are going to come up. They're going to lead us in a couple of songs, helping us respond to Jesus this morning. Let's be upstanding.